I'll praise my Maker while I breath, and when my voice is lost in death, praise shall employ my nobler powers. My days of praise shall never be past.
Rejoice, 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 give Walter Jr. said that I could take 22 minutes. So, okay, and Titus is, he said 22 minutes for the devotion. We'll see if I can do it, okay. And, I'm going to speak about Job. We're going to talk about Job. Job, and I used this in my family devotion, as I told Rob and had dinner with him last night and Yolanda, over about 20 years ago when it was Sarah and Yolanda and Winnell, and I spoke on Job chapter 10, just a chapter there. And I remember I broke down, I had tears in my eyes, and then I noticed Yolanda was crying too. Sometimes it's contagious. When some person cries, someone else is crying, and then they have a feeling for you or something. So if I start crying when I read this, and someone else cries, it's okay. Okay, it's okay. But Job chapter 10 does make me get a little crying. We got more. We got Bergeron's coming next week. Anyway, before I even that, sometimes when I a small thing there, and Rob and Yolanda said, "Were you going to say this what I said last night?" And I said, "Yeah, I'll say it." And the thing there. When I deliver pizzas, sometimes the customers say, "Where are you from?" And I say, "Well, I parked my car in Harvard Yard." Robert Bergeron, I parked my car in Harvard Yard. "Oh, is that New England?" Yeah, it's Boston. And a lot of people say New York, and that's, they get 100 points for saying New York. That's close by. "Where are you from?" So I remember a lot of times when, and by the way, let's pray for Atlee, and I forgot that, and Sasha, who's in North Carolina. I forgot to mention that. Because a lot of times when Sarah was living and we'd come home after a sermon, say Dwayne had it at Atlee, and sometimes they would mispronounce something in my feeble mind. Like my brother Dwayne would say Menno Simmons, and he would say Clement of Rome, and I'd say, and then Atlee would say in Luke 16, the rich man was clothed in fine apparel. And I'd say to Sarah, I'd say, "Man, they're not educated like me. They don't speak the King English like Boston. I don't know." And then she'd come back and say, "They can speak two languages. You make more mistakes than them, and they know a lot more than you." So she would put me in my place right after I said that. And I miss her for doing that. She would not let me say anything without getting a rebuke and saying, "Yeah, well, they're smarter than you, and you make more mistakes." So there's one word, when I was listening to a tape, I won't mention who it was, but he used a big word. It was A-N-T-I-P-A-T-H-Y, and that is pronounced antipathy, can't even say it, antipathy. And you know what sympathy is, and you know what apathy is, and empathy, but I had to look it up in the dictionary. Does anyone know what antipathy means? I looked it up, but I felt so foolish because I pride myself, buddy, that, my dad could do all the crossword puzzles, and my friend in Amazonia could do all the crossword puzzles. Useless trivia, three-letter word meaning African shrub and all this. They can do all those things. And I had to look up antipathy, and I didn't know what it means. Does anyone know what antipathy means? It means a strong dislike. Okay, it's not like empathy, sympathy, and apathy, a strong dislike. And as has absolutely nothing to do with my sermon, but I just want to bring that up so now you know what antipathy means. But okay, let's turn to Job 10, please. Job 10. I'm going to read that, the whole chapter of Job 10. A background on Job. As you well know, you may know better than I that Job, God lived close to Abraham's time, they said, because they measured their wealth in sheep and oxen and things like that. And so, bless you, Brother Norman. And God made a deal, a bargain, but he when Satan came by, the sons of God came in, and Satan came by also, and God said to Satan, "Did you consider my servant Job? There's nobody like him." And he said, "Well, yeah, you've got a hedge around him, like this, like that." He said, "There's nobody like him." And he says, "Well, let me mess with him, and he'll curse you to his face." So of course he killed his children and also his livestock, I guess. He took away his possessions, and so then Satan came around again the next round with the other sons of God and said, "Job," and he says, "Yeah, well, let me touch his skin. Skin for skin, he'll give all for his life. He'll curse you to his face." And he says, go ahead, do it, but just save his life. Okay, that's the backdrop. We all know that. That's the background of Job. And so then it happens where he had those boils. We can't comprehend how bad that would have looked. You know, worse than a leper or whatever. The boils from the crown of his head to the sole of his feet. Job chapter 10. And so this is, I'll read Job chapter 10. My soul is weary of my life. I will leave my complaint upon myself. I will speak in the bitterness of my soul. I will say unto God, do not condemn me. Show me wherefore thou contend with me. Notice verse 1. I will speak in the bitterness of my soul. The bitterness of my soul. It is good unto you that thou should oppress, that thou should despise the work of your hands, and shine upon the counsel of the wicked. Have you eyes? Have you have eyes of flesh, or seest as a man seeth? Are your days as the days of men? Are your years as men's days? That you inquire about my iniquities and searches after my sin. You knowest that I'm not wicked, and there's none that can deliver out of your hand. These hands have made me and fashioned me together round about, yet you dost destroy me. Remember, I beseech ye, that thou hast made me as the clay, and wilt bring me into the dust again. Have you not poured me out as milk and curdled me like cheese? You have clothed me with skin and flesh, and fenced me with bones and sinews. You have granted me life and favor, and your visitation has preserved my spirit. And these things have you hid in your heart. I know that this is with you. If I sin, then you mock me, and thou will not acquit me for my iniquity. If I be wicked, woe unto me. And if I be righteous, yet will I not lift up my head. I am full of confusion. Therefore, see you my infliction. For it increaseth. Thou hast huntest me as a fierce lion. And again, you showest thyself marvelous upon me. You renewest thy witnesses against me and increased indignation upon me. Changes of war are against me. Therefore then has you brought me forth out of the womb. Oh, that I would have given up the ghost. No eye has seen me. I should have been, though I had been not been. I would have been carried from the womb to the tomb. Are not my days few? Cease them and let me alone. Let me take comfort a little. Before I go, whence, I'm getting it, I shall not return, even to the land of darkness and the shadow of death. A land of darkness as darkness itself, and of the shadow of death without any order, and where the light is as darkness. So that verse 1 that Job is speaking, the bitterness of his soul. The bitterness of his soul. And, I'll come back to that in a second, but I was thinking of groups of three. There's groups of three in the Bible. Maybe you can think of other groups of three, but I wrote down Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, Peter, James, and John, Noah, Daniel, and Job. Okay, that's in Noah, Daniel, and Job. Job's thrown in there too. And then Job had three friends, Zophar, Bildad, and Eliphaz, but groups of three. For some reason, I don't know if it's just coincidental or what, groups of three, but at the end of this, Job, I want to talk a little about the judgment, and I said, I would like to be judged in groups of three. Like I've said that before, if I could be judged, I could have Norman in my left, Dwayne in my right. I feel better in a group of three because it's a fearful thing when, as the Hebrew writer says, let us fear God with reverence and fear, for God is a consuming fire. So I would like to be, in a group of three. I like with the whole congregation, really, but in a group of three. And it has nothing to do with Job 10, but I just say the judgment is what I was thinking of. Okay, the bitterness of my soul. And so Job, and in verse chapter 7, some of the memory verses in Job, though he slay me, how's it go? Though he slay me, I will not, how's it go? Though he, oh boy. One of those Job memory verses. You say it again, buddy?
Is it yet will I trust?
Yes. Yeah, that, what will I trust him? Right. And I know that my Redeemer lives, and the Lord gives, and the Lord takes away. Blessed be the name. There's other verses in there. One of my verses in there that we read Psalm 8. Hey, David attributed to, when I consider man, are the suns and the stars, the work of thy fingers, what is man that thou thinkest out of us, and the son of man that thou visit him? In Job 7, in verse 17, before I get to 10, it does say that it does basically the thought that David got from that psalm. It says, what is man that thou should magnify him, and thou should set thy heart upon him, and that thou should visit him every morning and try him every morning? What are we that God looks in our conscience and our thoughts and is going to judge us for eternity in that. You know, like where I am now in Wentworth, I can see the stars at night. When I lived in Newtonia, I couldn't. And I always go out there before I go to bed. I look out there and I can see all the stars and millions of miles away. I don't know how far. And then, you know, look at my own life. Nest in nothing. We're here for a short time and we go away, but we're going to face judgment. And I'm saying, like Job says that. Job says, and what is our life? Dijon, what is our life? And it's like that. And so Job knew that he was not wicked. Job knew in his heart of hearts that he was following God. And then he says, verse 7, they know I'm not wicked, and there's none that can live out of your hand. Your hands have made me and fashioned me round about, yet you're going to destroy me. And remember that I was made me as clay and like that. And then he said, verse 10, haven't you poured me out as milk and curdled me like cheese, clothed me with skin and flesh and fenced with homes, with bones and sinews. And so, okay, this is part of something I'm thinking of, that he curdled me like cheese. That's really, you know, really delicate, you know, I mean, like curdled me like cheese, like this. And so God said to Satan, I have no one like him. He's the tops, the epitome, the quintessence, whatever. He is it, this man. And Satan says, no, he's not. He's just like everyone else. You just gave him so many blessings that that's nothing. And so Job gets his possessions destroyed, his family, you know, his children. He still has his wife, and then he gets his skin. And so he says, is this what it's all about? Is that what it's all about? You love me. You blessed me. You give me everything. Are you happy now, God? Are you happy? You're happy that nobody talks to me? I'm like dirt in the ground. I'm scum. Nobody talks to me. Is this what it's all about? Are you getting jollies over this, Lord? I love you more than anybody, and now you're making me like nothing. You're really happy. You're happy. And he says, oh, the day I wish I was never born. Cursed be the day I was born. From the womb to the tomb. I hate my life. I hate my life. Why? Why are you really an evil God? And he gets all himself like this. Yet, in the heart of his heart, he didn't curse God. He didn't. And let's go to Job's wife. Job's wife, okay, no one is perfect, but, you know, Job was almost perfect, right? I mean, almost perfect, and his wife knows, what a husband. He's the model husband. He's a great husband, a great father. He's great for everything, widows and orphans. And yet, his wife said, well, this is your God? This is this is the one that you're bowing down and serving? Give me a break. Curse him and die. Your God is no good. Your God is... curse him and die. And he says, oh, you foolish women. You foolish women like that. And you know, you really, I mean, some people think, let me see, who, a lot of people think that it was his wife that had the second group of children. It wasn't like she got died, like, you know, the children. And it was his wife that gave him second number of children like that. And so, you know, Job's wife, we have to get a, she was just... she was just such a wicked woman, and God should have struck her dead for saying that, but we don't know. But I believe that his wife was probably the one, because she had a almost like a perfect husband, and saying that what God would do this, well, if you want to serve a God like that. And so Job's wife, I think she gets a bad deal on a thing like this. And so Job is speaking from the bitterness of his soul. Now, hold on. Let me just read a few verses in chapter 11. I said chapter 10, but it's not 22 years. Okay. Then answered Zophar the Naamite and said, should the multitude of words be answered, and should a man be full of talk be justified? Should your lies make men hold their peace? And when you mock us, shall no man make it you ashamed? For you have said, my doctrine is pure, and I am clean in your eyes. But oh, that God would speak and open his lips against thee, and that he would show you the secrets of wisdom, that they are double to which that is. Know therefore that God exalted of thee less than thine iniquity deserveth. So his friend Zophar says, you're a fool. You deserve twice as bad as what you get. I mean, how can you have something twice as bad as what he's got? But Zophar's friend says, you deserve twice your problem. You count your blessings. You're such a sinner like that. And Job, he couldn't believe it. Imagine being twice as bad as what he had. And that's his friends. And later on he would say, miserable comfort as you like that. And then at the end, of course, we know that, you know, God explained, where were you when I laid the foundations of the earth? And who made the Leviathan? And who made this animal? And who made that? And Job covered his mouth and said, I'm vile, I know nothing. But God, he forgave him. Say forgave him. He still didn't sin against God. And he said, now you got to pray for your friends because they have said bad things about me. And if you don't, because they won't be healed. And Job prayed and his friends were healed. And then he was blessed twice as much as before and he's full of that and he died. And so Job was a model man. He's mentioned twice in the scriptures besides the book of Job. Once is in where? What book? New Testament. Job is mentioned twice. He's mentioned in Ezekiel about these three men, Noah, Daniel, and Job. It wasn't for their, they'd only save themselves. It was such a crooked generation. They would only save themselves, not their wives and family. But he's mentioned once in the New Testament, Job. In James chapter 5, where it says, consider Job, the patience of Job. But then the next part of the verse explains what about it is. What does the next part of the verse say in Job 5? After Job 5, James 5:14. Does anyone know? Because someone brought that to my attention years ago, and I said, man, that's really something. Consider the patience of Job, showing that God is merciful and shows pity. And so that's the theme of the book of Job, I think, is mercy, and he shows pity. He's mercy, and he shows pity. It's, you know, not just the patience of Job. I would say, like, that's it. But anyway, just about done. And Job... God had a good reason to exalt Job. He says, I have none like him, none like him. I mean, that's something. And I just close with a few, I did this, and then close with a few Old Testament verses on judgment and, 1 Chronicles 16:33. I'll just read them off. 1 Chronicles 16:33. David says, God is the judge of the earth. Psalm 9:7. David says, or the psalmist said, he prepared his throne for judgment. Psalm 96:13. The psalmist said, the Lord is coming to judge the righteous. In Ecclesiastes 3:17, it says, young people, remember all these things that God will bring into judgment. It's a young people. And so yesterday I didn't have to work, so I flipped on the YouTube channel for us. And I watched the baptisms of Compa and Heidi and Buddy and Ruth and Sarah Troyer. I watched all the baptisms. I said, it was pretty good. Then Calvin Frist came on and I shut it off. Okay, I mean, I prayed for Calvin Frist, but I said I had enough. Five baptisms was good watching. I should have watched all Calvin's, but I think he got rebaptized, of course, not if he's Orthodox. But anyway, I watched the baptisms and I listened to the you know, when Compa was baptized, Buddy read the Didache. And he did it, I think, also for Dito, too, the Didache. And it was a long thing, but I listened to it and said, yeah, I like the Didache. And one verse on the Didache that I really appreciated was, it says, you know, we talk about in Acts 2, they met daily for communion or breaking the bread, apostolic doctrine, and fellowship, and it says prayer. But they met daily. And I quoted that verse in Hebrews 3 about exhort one another daily, daily. In the Didache, buddy, when you read that, it said something about the brothers to seek. Remember what the author of the Didache said? Seek out the face of the brothers daily. And so that's a good admonition. Seek them out daily. How about twice a week? Daily. Whether it's, the Didache is not inspired, but Hebrews is and Acts is, and daily. So I appreciate that, daily, daily, as much as we can, as much as we can. Anyway, I appreciated the baptisms of all the people. I guess Sarah said that COVID is going to, your husband said, the end is coming. I remember you said, you read your testimony, you read it, and you had to get it on the cell phone, so you didn't have the paper. And he said, the end is coming, and I appreciated all the testimonies and Heidi's baptism. And yeah, I you can get it on YouTube. You can get it on YouTube. But I said that's better than a lot of the other junk that I can watch on YouTube or something like that. Anyway, the judgment day is coming. And, now the last thing I said, the Old Testament, there's New Testament verses in the judgment. John 16:8. The Holy Spirit is going to reprove you of Jesus is speaking of sin, righteousness, and the judgment to come. Acts 24:25, Felix is shaking, he's trembling, and said, Paul spoke of righteousness, temperance, and the judgment to come. 2 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 10, for we must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ to give an account of the things we have done, whether good or bad. Hebrews 9:26, is appointed for men to die once, then comes judgment. And 2 Timothy 4, and these are just some of the sample verses. This is a lot more. 2 Timothy 4:1, Jesus shall judge the living and the dead. And Jesus did say in John 12 in verse 48, you know, who's the judge, first or God? As Jesus said in John 12:48, that his words shall judge us on the last day. Jesus' words are going to judge us on the last day. And he is the way, the truth, and the life. And let's just be prepared. There is that day coming. We don't know when. Let's be like Job. Let's try to be like Job. Let's try to be like Daniel and Noah. Let's try to be like the early Christians who gave their life. Let's try to be like the Anabaptists who gave their life. And let's try to be like us Christians who are willing to give their life for the cause of Christ. May the Lord be magnified. Comments, corrections, I thank you for enduring with me for over 22 minutes.
Thanks, Brother Robert. Appreciate that. I've often struggled to know like exactly how to interpret or what to make of the book of Job. It's full of a lot of questions, and I think you mentioned it kind of near the end there, but there's a couple lessons that I think you can take away that seem clear, and one is that it's okay to question God and ask why things happen. But it seems like one theme that carries through the scriptures is it's not okay to assume we know why, particularly when we were looking at suffering other people. And I feel like the things that Job's friends were struggling with, like the question that Job's friends were struggling with, they saw that there was something inexplicable happening to Job, something that was beyond bad luck. And they thought they knew why. They thought the reason why was that Job had sinned. And the book is spent with them trying to convince him that that's really what happened. And I think it's the same thing that the disciples were struggling with when they saw somebody handicapped in the book of John. And they said, Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? And I think the answer for Job's friends is the same answer that Jesus gave his disciples. He said, it is not this man, that this man sinned or his parents, but that the works of God might be displayed in him. And I think that was what was happening in the book of Job. I think it was an opportunity for God to shine, God's witness to shine out of Job. But I've always struggled to know exactly how to understand the book of Job. Thank you, Brother Robert, for sharing. That was